I want to ask you something tonight, and I want you to sit with it gently, not with dread, just with honesty. Picture a regular evening. Nothing dramatic. The kind of Tuesday where supper is done and the dishes are in the sink. And then something goes sideways. Not a catastrophe. Just one of those moments that lands heavy. Maybe the news from the doctor came back wrong. Maybe you get a call. Maybe you just feel, all at once, like you really shouldn't be alone right now. Here's the question. If you needed a real person at your door within 2 hours, not a text back, not a kind emoji, but an actual person who walked through and sat down with you, who would come? Take your time, count slowly, don't reach for the answer you wish you had. Go with what you actually know, what you've seen proved. Most of us, if we're being still and honest, feel the gap between what we wish that number was and what we can actually count on. That gap is not a verdict on you, and by the end of this episode, you'll understand exactly what made it and exactly how it gets filled. There's a man in these stories named Walter. He's 78 years old, good-natured, the kind of man who always remembered your name and asked how your mother was doing, lost his wife 3 years back. His kids are grown and scattered, good people, just far away and busy, the way people are. And Walter, when he sits and does that quiet count of who would come, gets to 2, maybe 3, if he's being generous with himself. And that stings him, not just because the number is low, but because he can't quite figure out what he did wrong. He was kind his whole life. He gave when people needed it. He showed up at the funerals and the weddings and the moves, and still, 2, maybe 3. So here is the most important thing I'm going to say in this whole episode, and I want you to hold on to it tight. Walter's number is not a measure of his worth. It is not a grade on his kindness or his character or how lovable he is. The truth is something quieter and more hopeful than that. What thinned out around Walter wasn't his heart. It was the structure, the web of regular, nearby people who, 2 generations back, would have checked in without being asked, who would have known without a phone call that something was wrong. That web came apart gradually, for almost everyone, in almost every town, through no one person's fault. So this story isn't about Walter failing to deserve people. It's about whether the safety net was ever built. And here's the good news, a net can always be built. So what happened to the web? This is worth understanding. Because if you blame Walter, or yourself, or anyone specific, you miss the actual shape of the problem. And if you miss the shape, you can't fix it. A generation or two back, a lot of people lived near their people. Your sister lived 10 minutes away. Your neighbor's mother had known your mother for 30 years. The person you'd call in a crisis was someone you'd already seen that week at the shop or at church or across the back fence. You didn't have to build the web. You were born into it. Or you moved into it when you arrived in the neighborhood. The web held you by default. Then, slowly, the parts shifted. People moved for work. Families spread across states. The church that used to be the thread of a whole street went quiet. The old neighbor retired and moved away, and the new one travels for work and doesn't know your name yet. The phone made it easy to feel connected to people far away, and a little less urgent to tend the person who was close. None of these shifts were bad decisions. They were just decisions, practical, reasonable ones, made one at a time, that together quietly thinned the net. The result is that millions of people, good, kind, deserving people, Walters in every zip code, are living without a web that was never really theirs to build in the first place. The old way handed it to you. The new way asks you to build it on purpose. And the books we're walking through say, you can. You absolutely can. But you have to know it's a thing that needs building. Now here is where the books give us something concrete to work with. And it's one of those ideas that seems simple until you really let it land. The strongest circles, the ones where help actually moves when something goes wrong, share one thing. They have a center that holds, not a leader exactly. Not someone who runs the show, just a person, or two, or three, who have quietly made a decision. The decision is this: when one of us has a hard night, we absorb the shock. We don't panic, we don't freeze, we don't wait for someone else to act. We pick up and we pass help around until it's steady again. Think about the circles you've been part of where this was true. There was probably someone like that in the room, a person who, when things went sideways, just moved, started making calls, showed up with food, stayed until the crisis passed and the person felt steadier. That person wasn't the richest in the room or the one with the most time to spare. They were just the one who had quietly decided, "This is my people, and I hold the center for them." That's what builds a safety net, not luck. Not blood, necessarily, a decision, and decisions can be made by anyone. Now let me take a side street for a moment, because there's a thought that a lot of people have right about here, and if you're having it, it's important. The thought sounds like this: "This is nice, but I hate asking for help. I would rather manage on my own than put myself on someone else's plate. I don't want to be a burden. I know that feeling." A lot of us were raised to admire it. The person who never complains, who handles it quietly, who doesn't make a fuss. And some of that is real strength. But let me ask you something. When was the last time someone you loved asked you for help and you thought, "What a burden they are"? Most of us, when someone we care about trusts us enough to call, when they say, "I'm having a hard time, I need you," we feel something more like honored, trusted, needed. The books point to something that takes a little getting used to: receiving help, when it comes from someone who genuinely wants to give it, is itself a gift back to the giver. You are giving them the chance to be someone who shows up. You're letting them be needed. A circle where no one will ever receive is a circle where no one ever gets to give, and both things go hollow. So I'm not asking you to be helpless. I'm asking you to be brave enough to let the people who love you do what they want to do anyway. Let me bring one outside point in here, because it's worth knowing it's not just the book saying this. Researchers who study what people need most in hard times, what actually keeps a person steady when things go wrong, have found, repeatedly, that the thing that matters most isn't just whether help is available in theory. It's whether you trust that a real person will actually come, not an emergency line, not a service. A specific person whose face you can picture and whose voice you can hear before you even dial. The people who have that, who can name names when they do the 2-hour count, come through hard things with more strength, faster. The people who can't get to even 2 names when they do the count carry a kind of weight that's hard to put down. Now, I'm not sharing this to make anyone feel worse about a low count. I'm sharing it because it means your circle is not a nice to have. It is a real, practical part of how well you move through your own life. And that means building it is not an act of neediness. It is one of the wisest things a person can do. Quietly, on purpose, before the hard night comes. There's another pushback that sits behind the first one, and it's deeper and harder. It sounds like this: "I've tried to lean on people, and it didn't go the way I hoped. People said they'd be there, and they weren't. I don't want to get burned again." That's not a small thing. That's a real scar from a real experience, and I'm not going to brush past it. Some people, when the hard night came, found out that the person they counted on wasn't quite what they thought, and that hurts in a specific, lasting way. Here's what the books have to say about it, and I think it's actually the most useful reframe in all five of them. The problem in that story isn't that you trusted. The problem is that a real circle, a genuine safety net, is never built on one thread. One thread pulled breaks. A net with many threads holds even when one or two give way. The reason the person who had only one or two to count on felt so exposed when those threads didn't hold is that one thread is not a net. It's a wire, and wires snap. So the answer to people let me down isn't to trust nobody. It's to build enough threads that the net holds even when one fails. And here's the quiet comfort in that. It means you don't need any one person to be perfect. You just need enough real people that the net as a whole stays strong. So let me bring this inward for a second, because I think a lot of people listening have already done more of this than they realize. Think about the last time something hard happened on your street or in your family or among your people, and someone just started moving. Maybe it was you. Maybe you are the one who called around and organized the meal drop, or who showed up at the hospital and sat in the waiting room even though nobody asked you to. Maybe you were the one who called the friend whose dad just died, not because you had to, but because you knew they needed a voice that wasn't just a text. That was you building threads. That was you, maybe without realizing it, being the center that holds for someone. And those threads didn't vanish just because the crisis passed. They left something behind, a little warmth, a little proof that you are the kind of people who show up for each other. That proof is the beginning of a net. The work from here isn't starting from zero, it's making those threads steady. Doing on purpose the thing you already do by accident sometimes. Choosing, out loud or quietly, that this is what your people do. That when the hard night comes, you come. Let's go back to Walter, because I want to tell you how his story moves. 3 months after that quiet count of two, maybe three, Walter does something small. His neighbor across the street, Deborah, has a leaky faucet. Walter knows plumbing a little, so he knocks on the door and says, "I heard you mention that faucet. I've got an hour if you want a hand." He doesn't frame it as a favor. He needs her to return. He just offers. A week later, Deborah's sister comes to town and they all end up at Walter's place for coffee. The sister knows the woman two streets over who runs a Tuesday supper group. Walter starts going to the supper. He meets the guy at the end of the counter, Leon, who it turns out grew up in the same part of the city Walter did. They were at different schools, but they knew some of the same people. 2 months after that, when Walter has a rough stretch with his knee, it's Leon who drives him to the appointments without being asked. Nobody made a plan. Nobody declared that a safety net was being built. Walter just put one small thread out, a faucet, an hour, a knock on a door, and the net began to form around it. That is not luck. That is a net built on purpose, one thread at a time, by a man who decided to be a person who shows up. So here's your one small thing this week, and notice the direction it points, outward, not in. This is not about counting your own threads and trying to collect more people like loyalty points. It's simpler than that, and it gives something before it asks for anything. Think of one person in your life who might be at a low count right now. Not someone in crisis, just someone who might be a little thin on people who would actually come. Maybe they moved recently. Maybe something changed for them. Maybe they're just someone who handles things quietly and alone because that's how they were raised. Now do something for them that costs you a little time and nothing else. A knock on the door, a call you make first. An offer of the thing you happen to be good at. The hour of plumbing, the meal you are already cooking anyway, and made a little extra of. Don't tell them it's a strategy or a book idea. Just show up, a little, for them. And then, And this is the part that turns a thread into a net. Mean it. Mean it. Let them know, in plain words, or just by showing up more than once, I'm your person for this kind of thing. Call me. That's the whole move this week. One thread, put outward, for them. The net forms from that. So that's where book one leaves us, and it's gentler than it sounds on the outside. The question was never whether you deserve people. You do, and so does Walter, and so does the person you just pictured who might be at a low count. The question is just whether the net got built, and nets get built on purpose, one small thread at a time, by people who decide to be the kind of person who shows up. So make one thread this week, one knock, one call you make first, 1 hour of something you happen to be good at. Give it outward, for someone else, with nothing expected back, just the quiet knowing that this is what your people do now. Next time, we'll sit with a part almost everyone struggles with, that knot in the chest that says, I should not have to ask, I don't want to need anyone, I would rather manage alone. Turns out there is something real and good hiding inside that feeling, and we're going to find it together, watched over, as always, by Daisy. I'll see you then.